This is a podcast from policyreview.tv.
Lots of food for thought there. So we've now got, which I'm very pleased about, the best part of half an hour for questions. So we've got one there.
Yeah. Right back to the first presentation, I was intrigued by the reference to the possibility in the new education bill of a conversion of a corporate college corporation to what I think, Glyn, you called a different form. Could you just give us a little bit more on that, please?
Yeah, this is Mike Light. At the moment, the FE sector is made up of two legal types. I mean, I was ignoring it. The SFA is a corporation sole, which is not a legal type that I would recommend, and I'm sure Jeff isn't very keen on it either. So obviously the FEC is incorporated under the 1988 Act, and there are a small number of companies limited by guarantee in the sector. Sorry, the 1992 Act. What you are able to do is to convert at the moment an FEC with the approval of the Secretary of State into a company limited by guarantee. That's embedded in the Act. It isn't used. It's a power that I'm not aware has ever been used, but is there. But what I'm saying is that actually there may be other legal forms. If you're looking to get private sector capital into a college, then actually the legal form they understand is a company limited by shares. And at the moment, under the Act, you're not able to actually convert to a company limited by shares. And if you compare your sector to the higher education sector, there are a range of legal forms in the higher education sector, from Royal Charter Corporations to companies limited by shares. There's one company limited by shares. The Royal Agricultural College is a company limited by shares, and there are a number of trusts. So you actually haven't got a level playing field, and therefore you maybe haven't got all the clubs in your bag that you may need in these difficult times.
Frank, could I just Please. Come in on there? Because one of the and we're in the adventures we've been in over the last year or so, we've discovered all sorts of little foibles like that, which I think we'd all like cleared up over a course of time, and it's something for the legislators. One of the problems is, as I understand it, an FE corporation can delegate some, but not all, of its functions
Indeed.
To a subsidiary. Whereas if it could delegate all its functions to a subsidiary, then it would be easier to set up different legal forms.
Indeed. And that's why I think we're starting to see the growth of group structures, where some of the functions are moving, but not all.
Yeah, it's not impossible. I think it's useful that the work's being done to explore those possibilities. I wouldn't let it hold you up. You could enter into a hard federation by contract. I don't think there's anything to stop a governing body from contracting with somebody to deliver, as they currently and effectively do now with the senior management team, but they can contract with somebody else to deliver what went on in a college. And four or five colleges want to get together and contract out what was delivered in them to a centrally constituted body that employed the staff and did other things. I don't think in theory.
In the context of Reading, for example, I mean, because Oxford and Chartwell Valley is the accountable body, it has delegated some of its functions to Reading, but of course it remains running Oxford and Chartwell Valley College. But if, for example, you are dealing with a college that maybe wanted to set up a new legal form, possibly in a joint venture, then it wouldn't be possible for the whole of the operation to be passed over into a joint venture.
And also picking up John's points, and I think Jeff is right to an extent, you could set up a company to buy shares, for example, to run a hard federation, but there are some non-delegable functions. So the governing body may actually pass the responsibility, but actually cannot actually sort of delegate the responsibility for that if it went wrong. And that, I guess, is one of the issues that may need to be dealt with in an education bill.
Yeah, and I don't... It may well get dealt with it, so be it. I don't see it as a huge problem. I mean, in effect, the governors have those responsibilities now. They in effect, delegate them to, in a sense, the principal. Principal's, I guess, the accounting officer, but principals are held to account by their governing body. Governing bodies could hold somebody else to account that would include the accounting officer. Accounting officers could be employees in more than one institution. It is not impossible to be two colleges, I suspect you can certainly be employed by two companies, so I suppose you could, in theory, be the accounting officer of two institutions. I haven't thought through it all, and it's really the domain of people like Glynn and probably people in the Treasury, but I guess my point is don't allow the complexities, the legalities, to stand in the way of getting the answer.
Sure. I think my point's a pretty simple one, though, that I think that we need to allow the publicly funded sector to be able to compete with the private sector on level terms, and it's not able to do that at the moment. There are some regulatory constraints on it, which I think are actually getting in the way.
Exactly.
Yeah, and I would encourage you to keep pushing on that, because it doesn't help. I guess
Sally, principal of Oxford and Jewell College.
The inference is that if you become a private limited company with shares, you'll find it easier to get funding. Talking to the banks, they actually say the opposite, that colleges are virtually zilch risk at the moment, and I accept if things change and colleges are allowed to go under, banks may take a different view, but we are a very attractive proposition. I think we would become less attractive if we chose lock, stock and barrel to become a private limited company with shares. It opens up other funding options which are not available to us. So I think there are definite advantages to us at the moment by being incorporated. And the other big issue is our pensions. Teachers' Pension Agency is very, very, and again, that will come up in the Reading talk, it's unlikely they would give over. You'd have to be very careful if you became a company limited by anything. So I think there are issues on the flip side as well as issues on the positive side.
It's invaluable having Glynn here. Who's always got a response to these things.
You are right, Sally, that banks would obviously like the Secretary of State to underwrite the loans, which is the effect of lending to an FEC. But I'm not saying that you would actually convert to a company to raise bank debt. That would be a pretty foolish thing. I'm saying that you could convert to a company to raise types of capital and to get into markets which you're not able to actually raise capital from the moment. You're right, the banks would loathe it, because they like the fact that the Secretary of State is underwriting FECs. But interesting enough, it's not actually underwriting companies limited by guarantee, of which there are a few that get some funding in the sector.
Yeah, and I suppose if you had I don't know what the Newcastle Group structure is, but I assume there's a holding company that, what's at the top, the college?
The college owns a group of companies. So the Carter and Carter business is in a series of companies limited by shares, I believe.
So I suppose if colleges were allowed to be owned, I suppose the nature of the relationship might change. But I take your point, Sally, which is why in my comments a minute ago, one of the things that I mentioned in terms of that I wouldn't do is allow the creditors of a college to suffer. I wouldn't allow a college to go down, even though it's not colleges I owe a duty to, it's learners. But if I were to allow a college to shut without paying off its creditors, the cost of bank borrowing for the whole sector would go up dramatically. So that would be pretty dumb for me to do, and I wouldn't. But you're right. And that's one of the issues. It doesn't mean that you might not want to consider it. But you're right to make the point.
If I could just add as well, I think what doesn't come up enough in these conversations is the role of governance. So although principals might well be fairly fleet of foot and want to do all kinds of things, the KPMG report, which I think is now in the public domain around colleges and the financial state they're in, correctly points out that governors who might be take a very positive view of risk in their business life are very risk averse in their role as governors of colleges. I think there's politics and economics and governance in this. And my own experience is often governance that can hold back some quite radical proposals that are coming through colleges. Okay, more questions?
Am I allowed a second? It's a very quick one.
Go on.
What probability would panel members give to the VAT, the critical VAT change, that would free up the whole shared services agenda actually happening?
Jeff?
Well, I'd say two things on that. You know, you're talking about two departments with differing objectives. Biz would love it. The Treasury, on the one hand, you know, talks about saving costs through shared services, and I mentioned the only thing I've got out of them lately is this pot of money to help promote shared services, and yet if I went back to them and said, you need to sort that out, they'd sit there and start doing the calculation. We're pushing. Probability, 50-50, maybe. Having said that, there are structures. If you enter into hard federation, where the senior management of that federation, basically the management is shared, the advice I've had is effectively there would not be VAT levied across them. So I, you know, and you're playing around with VAT.
Yeah, yes.
Have you got an answer on that yet?
Well, we're proceeding on the basis that we won't get the VAT issue shifted.
Right.
And
so it doesn't
we
help
can realise, you know, respectable savings without recourse to that. But that you're right, there are structures, and we are looking at the, confederations in some areas that would allow it to happen on a local basis. Because the trouble with a local basis is that the economies of scale are therefore relatively limited. However, the European directive, I think, puts us within spitting distance of a solution, and it's really all down to how HM Treasury interprets that and what guidance emanates from it. I think it has to be the right thing to do, because essentially this VAT is not being paid, but what is being paid is unnecessary costs for the provision of back office services. The VAT is not being paid at the moment because the shared services aren't there. So by allowing an exemption, then the VAT effect is relatively limited as far as the Treasury is concerned, because there's nothing going on at the moment. But what does happen is that for colleges, indeed other public sector institutions who wish to enter into such arrangements, they find a way of reducing their costs. So that there's a benefit to the Treasury from the reduction in costs and through the freeing up of scarce public resources, whereas the VAT issue is relatively neutral because the shared services are just at the moment.
John, can I just add that? I think you're right. I mean,
we need to lobby and make the case.
Whilst there are vehicles that are around at the moment that would allow FEs to share services amongst themselves, as long as they're not looking to make a commercial return from it. If you really want to open the shared services market up, you need to allow commercial operators into the market, because that's where the economies of scale will come from. And the current VAT rules do not allow those private sector providers to actually come into the market and avoid the VAT charge, unless Jeff's aware of schemes that we're not aware of. But, of course, if you actually wanted to force a government's hand, it would be possible to mount a challenge on the basis that the European directive is directly applicable in English law and that English VAT law doesn't comply with it. So if you wanted to force their hand, then that's a route for you. That may be the quicker route.
Maybe something the AOC should consider funding. But the point Glyn's made around the economies of scale are hard to get if you stay within localities, I guess for a lot of your back office, say IT, finance, funding systems, HR systems, we could run a common system for the whole sector. My guys estimate that would save between £200 and £300 million a year. The problem is, you know, it's kind of like the same thing as the personal health record in the NHS. Fantastic business case. Absolutely sensible to do, didn't work because people don't like to share. So I would be prepared tomorrow, I'd be prepared today to make that happen, because we could do it. It wouldn't cost a bean. You'd make money doing it. We'd procure it from one of the major providers. They could run a box for the whole system. It would make data collection much easier, reduce your costs, it'd be more accurate, more timely. We could fund on recent data rather than on ancient data. And you could save a hell of a lot of money. But I wouldn't even think of doing it unless virtually every one of you and all your colleagues came banging down my door to say, please. Because unless everyone, I mean almost everyone, actually is behind it and really wants it, it won't work. But that would save a lot of money and there wouldn't be a VAT issue either.
I think.
Great. John, I'm going to push on and take another couple of questions. We've got, I've made the decision as the chair, I'm going to cut your tea break time. We're going to go for another 5 minutes here and into workshops at 11.50, just because I think 15 minutes is more than
enough.
You're
taking them all around to Starbucks to make
One here at the front and one at the back, and then we'll see how we go from there. Just wait till you get the mic, because I think the acoustics aren't great in here.
Just pick up the theme of things that don't work. I think the evidence suggests from the private sector that the majority of mergers actually destroy shareholder value, which actually raises all sorts of issues about how you make these things work.
Well, it's like all shareholder value. It rather depends when you buy and when you sell, doesn't it? If you're a venture capitalist, they don't really care when or if the business fails. They simply care when they bought and when they sold.
Yeah, but I fully accept that point, but I think the point I'm trying to get at is making mergers work and maintaining the quality that's been derived over the last 16 years as that National Audit Office report is going to be hugely challenging.
Yeah, I think on the merger, John might want to say, the City and Islington College was the first merger in the sector in 1993. It took a long time to make it work, but I think it's worked much. It's a much stronger organisation at the back than the five predecessors there. And John oversaw, I think, an extremely successful merger at Ely and Hammersmith.
So that's two out of two. It's a small sample.
However, there are many other examples of colleges which, of course, are much smaller and not as strong at the other end of it.
Yeah, I think the news from the FE is better than that shareholder value issue might think. It seems to be about neutral, actually, I think, the evidence that we've seen so far.
There is an LSN paper, John, I think.
Yeah, there's not a lot of hard evidence, but there's quite a lot being written, I think, as a summary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
16 colleges,
yeah.
six it worked in, six it didn't work in,
and four it's been... Somewhere in between. I think on balance, though, the evidence is that about half of them are successful and half of them less so. I think that when you dig deeper, it's actually not so much about merger as a panacea, but it can be a panacea if it's done in the right circumstances, with the right preparation and with the right support, and making sure that the model you come up to is right for the circumstances you fail, and then supporting it properly is actually what it's all about. And then it can be a success, and there are some very, very spectacular successes around the country. So it's more about capturing what makes them work than simply looking at the stats, which frankly are a bit old and a bit out of date.
And I think if the key driver, if it often is the ego of the principal, that frankly is not a sufficient driver for mergers. I think if the drivers are right.
Any other driver.
Okay. Anyone else on that? Or should we take the next question there?
In one sense, as an accountant, I'd love to talk technicalities for the rest of the morning. But I was hoping we could bring the conversation out of some of the technical structural issues into really how we get the stakeholder enthusiasm. So often there's local authority parochialism, or there is a sense of holding on to what we've already had. And how do we actually influence across the country an eagerness to do something better for the learners that has the efficiency as well? And I think it's particularly local politics, maybe principals' egos, but how do we go about that? Do people have any views on that?
Jeff?
Well, it's a good point. I certainly have very, very, very limited sympathy for people that sort of talk about my college. And there's been a few examples of that which dismay me, because I think when money's running out and you've got opportunities to improve, you need to be guided by what is in the interests of learners and not what is in the interests of governors or local politicians. Having said that, Colleges are community assets. I think we've got to find ways of, and I talked, you know, pretty consistently about it. There's got to be local delivery, but we have to figure out ways of collaborating that save costs and improve performance, but also create local delivery. In terms of the impetus for it, well, I'm afraid you're right, they should be enthusiastic, but I suspect the driver is primarily going to be burning platform rather than joy. And, you know, unfortunately, one of my jobs is to run around and get people upset about what the future might be if they don't pull their finger out.
Okay. John?
Yeah, it's the, as you said, as it's come through, the era of nudge, isn't it, rather than the era of direction. And the phrase which we've suggested to Biz on a number of occasions is trust but verify. I think we've sort of had an era. It's an old Ronald Reagan phrase, in fact, used at the SALT talks. We will trust, but we will also verify, I think he said. And I think it's not a bad message that I think FE, if it is freed up and if it is encouraged, you know, to follow the needs and interests of its communities and its communities, generally will. I mean, that was certainly the experience going back. On balance, it does a better job of it than if you try and tell it exactly what to do. But I think from a government and a policymaker's perspective, you need the measures, the statistics, the research and the evaluation to convince yourself that actually what is going on is generally of public value and is in the public interest. But I think we have to go down that path. We have to unpick what that means and, in a sense, challenge the system to take its and its community's destiny in its hands and then see what happens.
Yeah, if I could add to that, I think in the new world, both politically, philosophically, and from a funding point of view, we have to incentivize colleges and training organizations to demonstrably deliver better to their communities. If that happens, and kind of we also assist that by getting out of between those conversations where we've always been. Lots of people have been, you know, representing, mediating, when actually we need a more direct conversation between colleges, providers, and consumers of what they provide.
Jeff, can I push you on a supplementary to that, finally, and both the others might want to come back. Going forward in this period, which is going to be driven by demand and learner choice, is there any role for planning at the sub-regional or regional level?
I suspect the politically correct, and I mean big P, politically correct answer is no. But I think the current government is very perfectly at ease to have planning at the local level, however you choose to define that. Different colleges and training organizations operate in different localities, different geographic areas and sizes. But there's a debate right now between those in government who would like local enterprise partnerships to have kind of look very much like RDAs with lots of money and lots of power, and those that would like it to be simply no public responsibility but a partnership of people coming together to try and do the right thing in an area. The challenge for us and for you is to make sure that we know what local communities want and it gets delivered. Gets delivered in a cost-effective way. If that's done, then hopefully local politicians and others might be enthusiastic and supportive about allowing their colleges to do the things they need to continue doing that. I think there has to be a conversation, whatever powers or money that go with it or not, between providers and employers and other stakeholders in a locality. And I base that comment on the fact that, you know, I've been to a lot of colleges, and the best ones do that already. Sorry. They're already hugely engaged with their local employers, hugely engaged with local authorities, and their learners are happy, and they do what their communities want. Those are the colleges where I could just go and say, here's the check, see you next year. and I wouldn't think twice about it for the next 12 months. The trick is to get the rest of them to wake up to doing that.
Right. Okay, and John? The last comment to John, and then we'll...
Just comment on the strategic plans. Actually, we were challenged, you know, what's the evidence for mergers being successful? I think you could ask the same question of strategic planning at regional level. It's alluring, isn't it? Let's tidy it up, let's get it all sorted and decide what needs to be done. And I think, whereas I'm sure there are many examples of regionally mounted initiatives which had a positive impact on the ground, I think the evidence that an overall strategic plan to revitalise a region ever made it off the page and actually did that job, that would be pretty difficult to come by.
Right, look, can I thank our three speakers very much? I think there's a huge food for thought there, which we can drill down to in the next session. So can I thank our three speakers very much indeed.